This is Brian Sontag. Today is April 12th, 2011. I'm interviewing for the first time John Bechtol. He is the assistant dean at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he deals especially with student veterans on campus and trying to come to campus. This interview is taking place at Bascom Hall in Madison, Wisconsin, and this interview is sponsored by the UW-Madison Oral History Project and is part of the Badger Veterans Oral History Project. So first of all, thanks, John, for meeting with me.
You bet.
The first question that I have is, you came to Madison in 2008. What programs and or services were in place for veterans when you arrived in 2008?
In existence in September 2008, the Vets for Vets student organization really functioned simply as an information distribution point. They produced some informational flyers on veterans' educational benefits and were housed in a dilapidated building near Brothers Bar near Lake Street and University. They simply handed out information. Other than that, in the registrar's office was the VA certifying official that would certify benefits for veterans. However, there was no outreach to incoming student veterans. It was really incumbent upon the incoming student veteran to locate either Vets for Vets or the certifying official to find out what they might be eligible for. And in fact, at the time, we ended up having quite a few veterans on campus that were not collecting benefits. So I did that initial assessment, and from there tried to build a veterans engagement strategy that we implemented starting the following fall.
Okay, if you could just take me through the process of what you did particular to establish like a connection with the veterans.
Well, during that year of 08-09, I did try and established contacts in all the major agencies on campus, registrar's office, financial aid, bursar's office, housing, UHS, counseling. For instance, an example of a meeting we had, I brought together representatives from UHS counseling, the Madison Veterans Center, and VA Hospital Mental Health Clinic. And while they can't share medical information, once you establish that human contact, they're more readily available and willing to at least call somebody that they know at an adjacent agency. So if the VA hospital is seeing someone that's that they know as a student and has recurrent problems, they may make an informal phone call over to UHS counseling. So building those kind of connections took quite a bit of time. There is some inherent resistance in a bureaucracy as big as UW-Madison to really doing anything new. So overcoming that also takes some time and establishing the right relationships and getting and forming a team that would support student veterans on campus. Then with our engagement strategy, what we started doing actually starting in June 2009, I identified all the incoming student veterans and when they would be coming through SOAR. We contacted them before they got here for SOAR, and then I met with them during their SOAR orientation, briefed them on resources on and off campus in the Madison area, and then also had them fill out a benefits worksheet. And the last thing they do in SOAR is to register for classes. So immediately upon registering, they went to the VA certifying official and got certified so that there was no delay in collection of their educational benefits once school started. In establishing these contacts with these incoming student veterans, of course, I also, in conversation, kind of fished to see if there are any special needs or requirements they may have, find out where they're living. If they have a disability rating from the VA, if they're eligible for any accommodations from the Bernie Disability Resource Center, and those sorts of things. And it's a lot easier to get that kind of information once you've established a personal relationship, even though it's a brief meeting, you know, mm-hmm. email or letters beforehand, face-to-face and SOAR, with the goal being that that student veteran has nothing else to worry about than typical new student problems when they arrive on campus. You know, finding your math class in the Van Vleck building, that kind of typical thing. Being a veteran should not be an additional, should only be a benefit. It should not be an additional burden when you arrive on campus. In fact, something else we do is try and link them up, all the incoming student veterans, with a veteran already in Vets for Vets. And the criteria being that that Vet for Vet member, the current student, takes that new student out for a cup of coffee sometime during the first 2 weeks, just to ask all those other questions, like, well, if I decide I need a parking pass, where should I get it? Where should I park? Or are there other alternatives? I'm taking Math 221. Who should I take and who should I avoid? I'm thinking about switching classes, et cetera. And those kind of new student type things.
And in that, when they meet up with this mentor,
yeah.
Is there any connection back to you if they find that there is a difficulty transitioning?
Yeah. I would get, yes, the current student, if they thought there was, you know, some unusual issue. And at that point in time, it's not going to be some deep traumatic issue, probably is not going to come up. But typically it might be, this person is married with 3 kids and they're having a really hard time finding a place to live and don't know where to turn. Do you have any suggestions? You know, I'm a homeowner. The vet for vet that met with him might be a single person, you know, lives with five other guys in the house and never really thought about what the criteria is if I have a wife and 3 little kids. You know, I don't necessarily want to live where other really typical college students
mm-hmm.
live. And so what are the alternatives? Where is it cheapest? Where can I get public transportation into campus so I don't have to pay $800 for parking? So those kind of things are more common. You know, I guess come up more often than, hey, I met with so-and-so and he is going to have a lot of problems adjusting. I mean, that stuff doesn't articulate itself or doesn't bubble up until typically later in the semester.
Okay. You yourself served 21 years in the military with the Army and the Army National Guard.
Yeah.
Do you feel that your military service is vital for working with veterans in your role right now?
I think anyone that's dedicated to the job could do the job. I think it helps conversations go faster. I understand when someone is in Germany and they're gonna be ETSing, what kind of information they're gonna get right before they leave, going through ACAP or similar discharge programs where you just typically sit through about 3 days of intense, long days of getting tons of information right before you fly and leave the service. This service member arrives here, where are their household goods coming in, who do I call to get them delivered, all those typical military-specific type issues that come up, rather than them having to explain it to a person. I know exactly what they're going through and trying to get here and get settled, particularly having moving nine times myself while on active duty. So I think it helps. I think the student veteran, also the fact that they're dealing with another veteran is, will offer their trust a little faster than just someone that's working here to help them. But I don't take that, if I get that trust, I certainly don't take it lightly, and I will do whatever I can to help in their transition.
One of the things that I came across that was more cumbersome for certain universities to handle was if a student who is in the military is activated in the middle of the semester.
Mm-hmm.
What processes are in place at UW-Madison to deal with that kind of, like, they could get maybe 24, 48 hours notice that they're going to be activated?
probably the, you know, if they're going to be deploying overseas, for like, for instance, a one-year tour, they're probably going to find out at least a couple months ahead of time. But if they know they're going to be leaving in the middle of the semester, what we, for an extended period of time, what we'll do is sit down and go through their class schedule. And they can kind of pick out what classes they think they can go ahead and complete. Provided there's time, they can talk to their instructor. If they're due one major assignment left, you know, they might be able to get a grade based on the work that they've already completed. If not, UW will allow them to withdraw selectively from classes that they need to, that they can't complete. And if there is any tuition paid or educational benefit paid, that will get refunded. Okay, so they won't lose that benefit just because they're withdrawing. That doesn't apply to the general student body. That's an exception. There are strict guidelines on when you can withdraw as a student, as you probably know. And this is a special consideration we give to National Guard and Reserve members who get activated. Probably the shortest time frame that I've dealt with, I got a call on a Friday evening from a member of the National Guard. He's actually a warrant officer in the National Guard, a helicopter pilot. And he was called Friday evening and told they needed him to fly up to North Dakota to assist in flood relief. This was several years ago. And the Wisconsin National Guard at the time didn't have a whole lot of pilots certified in using the hoist system. And there were a lot of residents that were stuck on the rooftops and that sort of thing. And the Guard had to get helicopters out there the next day. He was a senior in his last semester. And he thought he would be gone anywhere from 3 to 5 days. He ended up being gone 3 weeks. I talked, made the initial contact with the faculty members. Rather than him trying to continually contact all his faculty members, I kept them updated when we saw that he was going to be gone for a longer period of time. I offered to facilitate wherever I could, including sending him books, assignments if we had to manually mail stuff back and forth. But to tell you the truth, all his professors, and again, he's in upper division classes, worked with him, and he was able to graduate on time, even though he missed 3 weeks toward the end of the semester. So in that case, the faculty members really worked with him, and he did not want to withdraw and have to extend another semester. Mm-hmm. And it was fairly late in the semester too. So actually, right about this time of year when we see flooding now in April. So
that type of commitment by professors to help the student generally varies.
It does vary. But student to student, or professor to professor, rather. You know, I'd say the majority are going to work with students, particularly when it comes to that sort of commitment, like mobilization, etc. It's a little bit tougher when students are going to be gone for periods of time, you know, a week or 2 weeks. One thing that kind of changed, I want to say, was in 2006, 2007, the Congress put a limit of mobilization time of 1 year and for Guard and Reserve units. Now, up until then, the Army had typically mobilized, now I should back up, every service has their different deployment schedule. Generally, the Air Force will deploy somebody for anywhere from 90 days to 6 months. Marine units, typically reserve units, will get mobilized and deployed for 6 months. The Army works on one-year rotations in country. So they have been mobilizing Guard and Reserve units for a year and a half. So that way they mobilize them, they go through all that individual and collective training for several months before they head overseas for a year. When Congress passed a rule saying that they could only be mobilized for 1 year, all that train up had to be done piecemeal ahead of time. So instead of having that whole unit for 3 months to train up, now those Guard and Reserve members had to do a week here, 2 weeks here, 10 days here, and spread it out over the previous 6 months. What that did for students were, you know, they had planned on being in school still this semester. Say, I know I'm going to deploy in overseas in April. Well, I'm good fall semester. Register as normal. Then I find out I have all these 1 and 2 week training iterations breaking up my semester. So we had some difficulty with that. Once we kind of figured out that this was going on, as Guard and Reserve members come talk to me, you know, we try and finesse their schedule a little bit. Should you try and take classes? What classes can you take? You know, and kind of cherry pick, make sure that the schedule doesn't require them to be present. You know, a class with lab work where you have to be there weekly for labs is going to hurt you. Whereas if it's more a course where a lot of reading, some lectures, professors willing to record the lectures and make them available online, that sort of thing, you just got to write some papers, you can work around that. So we just had to adapt and try and accommodate the students best we can.
I have a few questions regarding while members are deployed. Does the university maintain contact with service members during deployment, like keeping them up to date with campus events, news, their academics?
Yeah, we do. Now, when a student is mobilized and is gone for an extended period of time, say for a 1 year deployment, we will keep their student account open, so they can still use their WISC mail, still access, you know, their DARS, and it also enables them to register for classes while they're still deployed. If they know they're going to be back in, for instance, in August, right now, if they're deployed, they can go in there and register for classes for next fall. So they aren't at a disadvantage. They aren't arriving in August and basically taking whatever's left. They can just register like they're right here on campus. We will keep their accounts open the following two semesters. So if they arrive back in August, their account will remain active for the following fall and spring, in case they aren't ready to come right back to school. After that two semesters, we'll give them a warning, but at that point they need to either register for classes, or if they don't, they'll have to reapply. So that's why we keep it open. Do we, you know, send them events and that sort of thing? No, not really. We might send them a note, hey, how's it going, that sort of thing. We know they're busy with other things, so we don't try and burden them with that sort of stuff. I'm sure their student account email probably gets filled up with all sorts of stuff that every other student, because it is still active. So they'll get all the usual things a student would get. But once we know they're deployed, you know, we try and find out. Normally, when they're about mid-tour, they'll contact us and say, yeah, I think I'm going to come back this semester. I just, you know, want to make sure everything's still good, and we'll let them know. And in fact, we can even look at talking to them about if their educational benefits are going to be upgraded because of their deployment, and start discussing that with them so there's no delay. So they know ahead of time, all right, when I get back on campus, I know this percentage of my tuition is going to get covered now because I've been deployed, and these are my options. So, again, we try and do that all ahead of time. So there is a lot of benefit to having that contact still established. But, you know, we don't tell them, hey, you know, the Union South is going to be open. I don't know what that's going to do for their morale. You know, I suppose I can send them a picture of me having a beer at Union South saying, hey, look at me, right? It's not going to do a lot for them.
Okay, and when they do schedule classes overseas, yep, do they get a special date, or is it purely based on credits that they've accumulated?
Just their usual registration dates. What their registrar does is they simply keep their accounts active like they normally do. There's no special registration time or anything else, which I think is fair. I mean, we're cutting them. We're making an accommodation that we would not typically give to your normal student for being gone for two or three semesters. They'd have to reapply, obviously, but we don't necessarily think that they should get bumped ahead of, you know, a freshman should get bumped ahead of senior in registration just because they're deployed. I mean, one, it would be very difficult to do. And in fact, sometimes when you try and do too many things, you know, try and change the system too much, we can end up screwing a guy over, you know? Mm-hmm. So they simply register based on their credit hours where they normally would.
Okay. I know that UW-Madison doesn't offer a wide variety or a large amount of distance learning classes, online classes, things of that nature. How many of those are open to members, service members overseas?
They can, we've had some folks take classes while deployed. In fact, UW Extension offers some classes that are online, and we have had service members deploy. In fact, take those. Now, we want to make sure that they're going to be able to transfer. We have to make sure admissions knows, and I like to get approval ahead of time that there's not going to be a big problem. Typically, if you were to leave Madison for a year, take classes somewhere else, and then come back, there are all sorts of red flags in the student database. You're going to say, wait, this guy can't go to another school and then come back here without reapplying and all these sorts of things. So there are a myriad of obstacles built into the system that would prevent that. However, we have had students take online courses through UW Extension, actually using state veteran benefits that they became eligible for after they'd been employed for 90 days. So it gives them some free tuition credit hours that they can use, which is good. Probably the class that has the most online, or the online class that has most military members enrolled is, it's a new class. I think they began offering it in 2009. It's a grand strategy class out of the history department. It's really geared toward mid-level career military folks, senior non-commissioned officers, mid-level officers, like majors or senior captains. And they have a number of folks enrolled really around the world in that course. And it is strictly an online course. So for Madison, that's probably the most prevalent course used by military people deployed.
Okay. Is there any credit given for military classes that they might have taken during their active duty, or for skills that they might have learned?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I get that a lot with incoming student veterans or just veterans interested in attending UW-Madison. A student can receive 6 general education credit hours just for having completed basic training in any one of the military services. That 6 credit hours correlates to the 6 credit hours a student would earn if they took the first 2 years of any of the ROTC programs on campus. Beyond that, a student veteran can get credit for a military class if a similar class is already offered here at UW-Madison. A good example would be a language class. There's the military Defense Language Institute out in Monterey, California, which is a language immersion program that corresponds very readily with if we offer that same language here on campus. If they're taking a language that we don't offer here on campus, you won't get credit for it. So to get credit, it has to equate to a class that's already on campus. So like I said, the languages are easy. Now you get into something like aircraft maintenance, we don't offer that. So we can't give you credit hours for an aircraft maintenance class that we don't offer. And when I talk to student veterans that may think, oh, you know, the UW-Madison doesn't respect military education and we should get credit, there would be hollow credit hours. The same as if you could take a upper division class at MIT, but if we don't offer that same subject here, even though it's at MIT, you aren't going to get credit for it because we don't offer it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and admissions will discuss any course a veteran thinks may correlate onto campus. And they'll do that with any student. And by all means, they'll look at military things. And they even says on their webpage that Defense Language Institute is a great one. Not only that, you can take, when you start here, you take a language proficiency test if you want to get credit for foreign language, and that's a great way to measure it too. So, like I said, you just get that 6 general ed credit hours. Beyond that, it's case by case basis.
Okay. Moving on to a veteran's gone through their active duty. Many veterans interviewed that I've read about said that transitioning back to an academic environment was one of the bigger hurdles coming from being in active duty. What type of things do or does the university offer to help them get back into an academic environment and academic mindset?
Well, it's that's a good question, and we're only in the beginnings of being able to offer something like that. Up until now, we've just met them during SOAR, trying to get them involved as best for vets, and then handle them on a case-by-case basis if they have issues. It's a very different environment here on campus for someone that's been active duty for 4 or 6 years. Madison, the campus is barely controlled chaos to them. They're used to, when you take a class in the military, it's the instructor's responsibility to make sure that you learn the material. Here, the exact opposite, it can sometimes be true. For example, if there's a failure rate in a class, any class in the military, say there's a failure rate of 20%, the military, I'll tell you who they blame. They blame the instructor. There's no way 20% of the people should fail your class. You're not a good instructor. Here, we routinely have classes where you have a 20%, get D's or F's. Yet, it's kind of looked upon by the faculty as, well, it's the student's fault. So, readjusting to that approach, particularly student veterans that are in freshman and sophomore classes, that a lot of them are reader type classes, recognizing the fact that, the faculty member, it's not that he has it out for you, but it's your responsibility to learn it. It's not his problem. He puts out the material. If you don't learn it, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So we do try and get veterans take advantage of GUTS and different learning centers, physics learning center, chemistry learning center on campus. Additionally, they have money allocated to pay for private tutoring per year, and if they don't use it, it simply doesn't get used. So I encourage them to take advantage of that, and that's not widely publicized. So once we tell students about that, hopefully they'll take advantage. Starting fall 2011, we are going to be offering a veterans transition course. I have a rough syllabus already done. It's going to be a 1-credit-hour seminar. Really serve a couple purposes. First is to educate the veterans on resources available in and around Madison, educate them on benefits. A lot of veterans get information from other veterans, and it's not always right. So we want to make sure that incoming student veterans have accurate information, so when their buddy asks them about something, they know the right answer. Also, part of that instruction may be time management, kind of a review of that. They probably got some of that already in the service, but also study habits, making them aware of all the different ways you can get help with academics on campus. And there are a lot of different ways. And then kind of taking that, the idea that, they shouldn't have to need it. If you haven't been in school for 6 years, you may need tutoring, okay? It's a different mindset living in the academic world than in the military. In the military, it's kind of ordinary tasks done by ordinary people under extraordinary circumstances. And on UW-Madison, it's often extraordinary stuff learned by ordinary people in ordinary circumstances. So the material is the challenge, not the conditions under which you're doing it. And so readjusting and refocusing, I think veterans can use that additional help. So we hope to incorporate that into this 1-credit-hour seminar we're going to be offering in the fall.
You just mentioned tutoring, mm-hmm. when they get that allocation of funds for the tutoring, is it through the school or do they go outside of the school?
They could do it on their own. They do not have to go through the school. What it's simply, all they simply need to do is actually turn in a memorandum to our VA certifying official what the class they're getting tutoring for, how much it's going to cost, and there is a maximum amount. I believe it's $600 a year allocated for it. So you can't get it for every class, but those classes that you have specific issues with, you know, take advantage of it. And again, that's done right through our certifying official, and they get reimbursed. They pay up front, turn in a receipt, and they get reimbursed. So it's a pretty simple process, mm-hmm. compared to a lot of the things that the VA does.
Other studies that I've seen place about a 30 to 35% rate for PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, for veterans coming back from active service. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that the school provides for that, or is that generally something that is assumed the Veterans Hospital is supposed to, or the VA is supposed to handle? That's not something that the school can really attack with the funds or the policies that they're like constrained by.
Yeah, the now if a service member is diagnosed with PTSD, typically they'll be diagnosed when they leave the service. Sometimes symptoms don't arise until after they've left the service and they're back, you know, where back home, wherever that may be, or here on campus. And in which case they can always still go and visit the VA hospital. The VA is pretty proactive in getting those service members help. If, say, the symptoms don't arise till afterwards and it happens here on campus, we have had students that once they've been back here on campus, have had some PTSD symptoms. We try and connect them mainly with either the Madison Vet Center, which is a great place to start, over on Williamson Street nearby campus, or the VA hospital. VA hospital can be a little imposing because it is a huge structure, it's a huge organization, tons of people. The Madison Veterans Center, which is kind of a subcomponent of the VA hospital, but it is strictly counseling for combat veterans, and it's a very home-like atmosphere. They don't prescribe medications, but it's a great initial step for service members that need that help. And I've had quite positive feedback from student veterans who've gone down to the vet center. So those are two resources we're lucky to have right here in Madison. I mentioned earlier in the interview that I did have some joint meetings with the Vet Center, UHS Counseling, and VA Hospital personnel. Again, there are restrictions on sharing medical records. They can't do that. But once you get that personal relationship, I know that if a student veteran goes into the UHS Counseling Center and they realize they're a veteran and they think they're, whatever issues they may have are veteran-related, they're certainly going to push encourage that student to seek help. And it isn't that this UHS counselor is saying, go off to this big beige building, okay, off on the horizon of VA hospital and they'll take care of it. They know the person, you know. And now that we have this relationship, they'll say, hey, I'm gonna call up so-and-so over here at VA hospital. Let's do it right now while you're sitting here in the office. Because that student may or may not do that when they walk out the door. So let's do it right now and get something set up. And likewise with the Vet Center. So UHS won't necessarily tackle counseling, won't tackle PTSD itself. They do have some, I know they've had groups in the past where student veterans have met together and talked about things in UHS counseling. But they recognize that, you know, the Vet Center and the VA hospital are probably the best place for those students to get recurring help.
Obviously, PTSD is possibly one of the negatives of serving in the military. What would you say, in your opinion, are some of the positives that students bring out of military service and use specifically while they're college students?
I think just that life experience of leaving home, being on your own, being part of something bigger than yourself, really gives student veterans a kind of broader view of the world. Of course, you throw in there the fact that they, you know, if you do well in the military, right away, if you're doing one thing well, you aren't going to be able to do just that very long. You're quickly going to be given something else to do. And that's kind of how it works. As soon as you get comfortable doing one thing, you're going to be doing something additional. And that's just, so getting that often, you know, even though they've only been in for 6 years, you'll have veterans that were in a supervisory role, you know, and they have been responsible for millions of dollars of equipment and either maintaining or doing things that could potentially cause harm, risk life and limb, making what we in the civilian world would consider pretty important decisions, yet these are being made by 21, 22-year-olds. And so you put someone in that environment, they function successfully, and then you take them out now and you put them in a classroom with people who just graduated high school and kind of had the attitude during the 13th grade, only I don't have to live at home. And that's where you get kind of those, kind of the friction there.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think having that life experience, and then there are, you know, time management skills, okay? That's one of the things you first learn, you know, whatever service you're in, going through basic training, etc., you're never gonna have enough time to do everything. And so you got to prioritize, you got to figure out ways to do things faster. And it may seem silly, but you know, whether it's making your bunk or getting dressed, things like that, shaving in the morning, you're never going to have enough time. And so you got to work with other people. How are we going to fix this? And how are we going to accomplish this in such an incredibly short amount of time? A lot of folks, before they go to basic training, when you say, well, you can get ready in the morning, you're going to need about 90 seconds. How? I take 2 hours to get ready to move. No, you know, you can do it that quickly if you plan ahead and take care of everything you need to do, you know, the night before. And, you know, by the time folks leave the service, they recognize how to prioritize, for the most part, you know, there are always exceptions, but how to prioritize things, how to time manage, not leave things to the last minute, work with other students, you know, to do well in class, study groups, etc. So I think there's a lot of pluses to it. You know, not to mention the fact, I think a lot of them, particularly you got folks that served in combat arms, whatever, living in the dirt for a long period of time overseas, you know, just the fact that they wake up in the morning with dry feet in a warm apartment, that in itself is a luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't always take that for granted.
Yeah, I don't know very many students here, general students, who take 90 seconds to get ready unless they wake up 10 minutes for a ten minutes
yeah.
late for a test.
Yeah, yeah.
Shifting away from the service member in particular, and more into the scope of UW campus in general, would you describe UW-Madison as a veteran-friendly university?
Well, I think it's the Madison as an institution, I would say, is kind of neutral. You know, when I was hired as an assistant dean of students, I still have all the normal responsibilities of an assistant dean of students dealing with the general student population. But on top of that, I was given an opportunity and task. It was a job, you know, additional job, but it's a job I enjoy. Doing outreach with student veterans and trying to establish those contacts. I think generally Madison, although it had a reputation back in the 60s and 70s of being anti-establishment, anti-military, etc., as an institution, again, it's fairly neutral on it. I wore a uniform for 4 years on this campus and never had a bad remark said to me. So I think most of the students appreciate folks that serve in the military, etc. I think there are some things that Madison could do to improve itself as far as assisting and attracting student veterans. Right now, for instance, the Yellow Ribbon Program, which would encourage out-of-state veterans to attend UW-Madison, Madison is the only big school that does not participate in that. Marquette University participates. Even Edgewood College down the street participates. Yeah, Madison has elected not to the past several years since the program began. It's a subcomponent of the post 9/11 GI Bill. And I'm hoping that Madison will decide to participate starting next fall. That's under discussion right now. Of course, it costs the university money to do that. So it is. I mean, it kind of where the rubber meets the road. How important is the veteran population? If it's something you're just willing to tolerate and work with, fine, then don't participate. If it, the veteran population you think brings something to campus and you want to encourage that, then the best way to indicate that is participation in the Yellow Ribbon program.
Would you characterize the university's hesitancy to join as purely financial, or are there other aspects that they are not comfortable with?
I think it comes down to financial and also workload for some of the various agencies. I should explain the Yellow Ribbon program is a program where if someone is from out of state and is a non-Wisconsin resident, so he's going to have to pay out-of-state tuition. The post 9/11 GI Bill will cover in-state tuition, so you have that difference between in-state and out-of-state. If a school agrees to participate in this program, the VA will pay half that difference and the school must make up the other half of the difference. So there is a pot of kind of tuition remission that UW-Madison can use. Right now that's mostly used for need-based scholarships for students. And so it's a conscious decision, you know, that the leadership here in Madison has to make what's more important. And that's not a question they like to hear. Which student is more important? Because it puts them in a very uncomfortable spot, mm-hmm. and they don't like it. And they prefer that question not even be asked. But that's something they're wrestling with right now. I don't think it's any kind of statement against the military at all, or against people that have served. I think it's purely financial.
I've read that the post 9/11 GI Bill, since you brought it up, that's part of what the Yellow Ribbon program is. I've read that one of the cons that people see is that it takes an average of the in-state tuition, and that is what generally you are given. Do you think it would make sense to apply a national average for somebody, say, coming out of a state that has a lower in-state tuition, trying to go to an out-of-state school, and they're not compensated the way that they would be if they were a resident of that state?
Yeah, it does. The way it's going to be, and there are a couple changes post 9/11 GI Bill. In the past, every state had its own cap per credit hour. Up through this current semester of spring 2011, if an undergraduate took 16 to 17 credit hours, their tuition, because Wisconsin's cap was so high, was almost covered. That will cease starting next fall. The VA will only pay the flat in-state rate. So it really puts the 56 out-of-state student veterans that we have right now attending school in a very precarious situation. I'll give you an example of a particular student veteran. He was a California resident, went active duty. As he was leaving active duty, he knew he wanted to attend University of Wisconsin. Married with two small kids. He comes here straight from active duty, settles here for a few months, ready to start school. bought a house here in Wisconsin, has a Wisconsin driver's license, registered to vote here in Wisconsin, intends to live here in Wisconsin. He's attending school using the post 9/11 GI Bill. Now, he's only been paying a few hundred dollars every semester out of pocket because of this cap. Now, that's going to change. It's going to go for a few hundred dollars to about $8,000 per semester that he's going to have to pay out of pocket. He's been here 2 years. Now, yeah, he wasn't a Wisconsin resident. So the VA has kind of put him in a bad situation. So what's he going to do? But he didn't have a lot of options. He can't go back to California and say, well, I want in-state tuition in California now. California's going to say, you own a house in Wisconsin. You vote in Wisconsin. You have a Wisconsin driver's license. You pay state income tax in Wisconsin. You're not a California resident. You're a Wisconsin resident. I've run across that exact same situation several times with students who leave active duty, come here because they're intent on attending University of Wisconsin, find out they can't get residency here unless they live here for a year without being in school. Probably the most sad example is a Minnesota resident who came here to school, actually attended Madison Area Technical College several semesters, was applied for and was admitted here to Madison, UW-Madison, finds out because he had attended MATC, UW-Madison will not grant him residency status for the state of Wisconsin because he came here with the intention of going to school. And if that's the case and he attends school without living here a year, in this case, he, even though he didn't attend UW-Madison, he attended MATC. Minnesota resident. Well, shoot, you know, I don't want to pay state tuition. We have a reciprocity agreement with Minnesota. So he tries that route. Minnesota says, you've been living in Wisconsin. You're a Wisconsin resident. You're not a Minnesota resident. Okay? UW-Madison says, you're a Minnesota resident. You're not a Wisconsin resident. So we have a number of veterans coming off active duty in that exact situation. Unless you did some sort of national program, I don't know. You know, it's really up to the states. It's a hard to fix problem. There is a Big Ten school, I believe it was Indiana, even before the Yellow Ribbon program came out. They said, if you're coming to University of Indiana on post-9/11 GI Bill, we won't make you a resident, but you're going to pay resident tuition. They said that right up front, right before Yellow Ribbon program even existed, because we want veterans here. That, to me, is a veteran-friendly campus. You know, helping out veterans once they get here on campus, yeah, okay. We're not hostile, but I wouldn't say we're going out of our way to attract.
Do you see the university ever getting to the type of commitment that you said Indiana shows?
I don't know. That's a good question. I just attended a meeting last week, and I didn't get a great feeling coming out of there that the people who have to do the work were necessarily supportive of doing this. Again, mainly for, because of the financial burden and the fact that they would have to reallocate funds that they were hoping to use somewhere else. But that's choices, you know. If the chancellor makes a decision and can look in, you know, look you in the eye and say, look, you know, this student deserves tuition remission, not you. Okay, let's say that. My thing is I don't want him to say, well, we don't have any money, so we can't make a decision. You're making a decision. I don't know that we'll get there, but by the time you publish this, I guess we'll know an answer because of the applications are due next month, so in May.
Okay, we've kind of transitioned into talking a little bit about the post 9/11 GI Bill. Want to get your thoughts. Senator Jim Webb, the man who is mostly responsible for the bill, compared this bill to the first GI Bill, saying that it would have the same economic growth and expansion for this generation as the original. First off, do you think that that is possible given the changes in how the military is structured, for one? And what are your general thoughts on the GI Bill? Has it been successful? Is it something that's good for veterans?
Well, I think the post-9/11 GI Bill is definitely good for veterans, absolutely. It enables them to go to school. I mean, a single veteran coming off active duty can go to school full-time and not even have to work if he or she watches their money. It's a little more challenging for someone with a wife and kids. But as far as Senator Webb's comment that it's going to have the same economic impact nationwide that at post-World War II, I don't believe that because simple numbers. There aren't nearly the same number of service members coming off active duty as you had in World War II. I don't see how you could draw those same conclusions. I think it's a very generous benefit, but you know, just here at UW-Madison after World War II, they were housing students. They had so many students here, they were housing them up in Baraboo and busing them down here. They were housing them outside the Badger Ammunition Plant. We don't have that issue because we simply don't have that huge volume of veterans. So I think the positive impact you'll see long-term is it is enabling a lot more student veterans to go to school, and hopefully after they graduate and they get back out in a civilian society, whether they're in private sector, public sector, they're gonna be making contributions, and that college degree is gonna open doors for them that otherwise wouldn't be open.
Okay. We've also talked a little bit about schools outside of UW-Madison. What kind of communication is there with other schools? Just simple dialogue about finding ways to make a campus better for veterans, or maybe communicating about veterans who want to transfer because they think that's what's best.
Well, when I first started in this position, the first thing I did was try and locate schools that had seemed to have some sort of veterans program going on. One of the most established programs that I found in fall of 2008 was actually out of California State University, Long Beach, which is largely a kind of a commuter school. But they had a great veterans program established out there. And I contacted a guy who's a retired service member, very willing to give me everything. Literally, he sent me everything he had, where he started from, what he was doing, what he thought worked, what he didn't work. And that's what's great when you find campuses with other veterans. I mean, kind of in the service, plagiarism is the greatest form of flattery. I mean, if you've got something good, you're kind of expected to share. You did something great, you produced this great product, you got a great scheme of getting something done, you're expected to share. And you take that as a compliment. People say, hey, can I copy your stuff? Absolutely. Some campuses that I thought had a good system in place were not as willing to share. I will say that there was one Big Ten school who, while they had a veteran working, veteran services piece, and some good, they seemed like they had some good stuff going on, that individual, the veteran employee, was not allowed to communicate outside of the university. Her civilian boss was, who was a PhD academic type, and who was quite willing to share what they did for a honorarium, which is a payment. Of course, I laughed at that. There's no way I'm gonna pay for that. And since then, I've talked to the number of campuses, and I get a call from a number of campuses too, asking, hey, you're a big school, what are you guys doing? There's no shortage of good ideas. You know, I would like to see a veterans center here on campus. You know, Vets for Vets is a student organization, and they have an office suite. I think it would be great to have a veterans center where myself, an assistant dean of students, co-located with the VA certifying official from the registrar's office, someplace where we can conduct veterans business, have the county veterans service officer come in and work out of there a couple times a week, which he does now out of the student board office. But they have really a business side in the vet center, veterans community side in the student works center, and have them complement each other. I don't know that we'll ever get there. I mean, that's a common theme where you see where they have successful veterans programs on campus. We don't have a vet center. We have a number of centers on campus. I don't know that we'll ever get a veterans center.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're a bigger school. A lot of four-year schools are finding it hard to compete for enrollment with veterans compared with the relatively better cost and convenience of, say, a community college or a for-profit online university. Are there ways to combat that, or is that just something that you're just going to have to live with because we have possibly higher standards placed on admissions?
Well, we do. veterans are one of eight preferred populations when it comes to admissions to UW-Madison, but those admission standards are still there. They have to meet the minimum standards and have demonstrated that they're going to be academically successful here at UW-Madison. I mean, you know, Wisconsin, we want everybody to feel good, but bottom line is it's a lot harder to get in here than it is UW-Stout. It just is. We have a lot more applicants, so we can be more selective. Veterans will get a second and third look when they apply for admissions, but if they haven't demonstrated that, they aren't going to get admitted. So many of them, you know, a common scenario is someone did okay in high school, they go on active duty, they achieve positions of responsibility in the service. Now they're ready to go to work, get their degree, but they're relying on those high school grades. The fact is, they're probably going to have to go to a community college or another four-year school for one or two semesters before they transfer in. And when they get here, Madison is academically very difficult. You mentioned some online for-profit schools. Absolutely, with the post-9/11 GI Bill, it just, the folks trying to make money off this is just blossoming. You see it online, you see it in news magazines. These for-profit universities, they're gonna admit you. They're gonna take it because they know your tuition's gonna get paid. Whether or not you learn anything, that's a little bit farther down on the priority list, but they know they're gonna get their tuition paid. And so it's sad, but that's just a fact of life. Again, we don't do any recruiting for veterans. I would like to say that we do, but we don't. Veterans come to us. We don't go to the veterans looking for them.
Well, with that said, I mean, you're quantifying we don't recruit veterans. Do we recruit very many of the general student body? I would think that a campus that has 40,000 students doesn't necessarily need to recruit.
It doesn't, and that's, I think, I can't speak for admissions, but that's kind of the take. I mean, the fact is admissions will get, you know, 20,000, 25,000, 30,000 applications. So the only recruiting they do recruit specific populations. They do. And you'd have to ask admissions. I don't want to go into exactly who they're trying to recruit. Many of them are that preferred population I was talking about. But right now, even though veterans are a preferred population for admissions, they are not actively recruited. Probably the most substantial, when you say recruiting, the biggest thing, in my opinion, if someone said, how do we attract student veterans? I'll say, you don't need to go to military bases. You don't need to go to veterans groups. You sign up for the Yellow Ribbon program. And Wisconsin is a well-known name. People know Wisconsin. They want to go to Wisconsin. You make out-of-state veterans, non-resident veterans, capable of coming here without paying tens of thousands of dollars out of pocket, and that they can use their GI Bill here and have their tuition covered, they will come in droves, quality student veterans.
I've looked, while we're talking about veteran student population, Madison's veteran student population has increased over the past 4 years. The information that I have here goes up until fall 2009. And starts in fall 2005, and in 2005 we had a population of 347 veterans that were known to be taking the post 9/11 GI Bill, and in 2009 it was up to 565. And generally speaking, UW colleges, the system in general, had an increase of 1.6%, and it's continued to go up, whereas UW-Madison has kind of leveled off around 1.4. Is there anything that you see that explains why Madison seems to be leveling off a little bit while the other systems are increasing their amount of student veterans on campus?
Yeah, I think, well, you mentioned in going back to 2005 now, prior to August 2009, the GI Bill that the federal government awarded was Montgomery GI Bill, not very generous. You got a flat payment of about $1,100 a month to do with what you wanted, go to school. You had to be in school to get it, but it didn't nearly cover tuition. The post 9/11 GI Bill actually took effect in August 2009. And what you saw after that was we continue to see a rise, but because of the admission standards, I mentioned students not being able to get into Madison. We have a lot of student veterans, and I apologize, I don't have the numbers right here, but I tell you that probably maybe a third of the student veterans that apply actually get admitted here. Now, let's go to, say, Madison Area Technical College. Their numbers more than doubled in fall 2009. And I know a lot of those students, we're seeing them come in now as transferred. So they have to, while they're a veteran, part of preferred population, they have not demonstrated that they're going to be academically successful. So they have to take that 1, 2, 3 semesters at another school and then transfer in. A veteran who goes full-time at one of the other four-year schools or a technical college takes a full load with classes that will transfer to Madison and maintains a 3.0, has a very good chance, very good. Not guaranteed, can't say that. Very good chance of getting admitted here. And I expect to see probably 100 new student veterans next fall. So we're starting to see that bubble. We didn't see that immediate bubble that a lot of like UW colleges, the two-year colleges, mm-hmm. the technical colleges saw. But that bubble is going to, those that want to end up here at Madison will be coming here to Madison as transfers.
And those students that want to come here but might not be able to right away, yeah. How involved are you in that process of getting them to a place where they can succeed, first of all, if they have the capability, and get them to be able to transfer into a university yeah. with our standards?
We have not been, to be honest, we talked about having some sort of information fair, say, over at MATC. Now, we're talking across the state. You know, there's so many different UW colleges and technical colleges and other four-year schools that addressing that to student veterans on those campuses can be difficult. I mean, I wish if this was my, working veterans with my full-time job, it would be fantastic. And I could maybe do some of that. Now, I don't know how some of those four-year schools would be feel about me showing up on a campus and saying, don't you want a Big Ten? there is some identity crises there. I don't want to create heartburn in these other four-year schools. Like, yeah, you don't want to just, you want one of our diplomas, not theirs. And some of them may like it at the smaller campuses, to be honest with you. I've actually had some student veterans transfer out from Madison, for instance, from Madison to Whitewater, just because Madison was just too big, the class was too big, they could get the major they wanted and enjoy themselves more now at UWY. So, Madison is a huge campus. It's not for everybody. So, but I think we could certainly offer that more. Now, what I do get is, because the UW system has a committee on student veterans issues, we meet twice a year. I have met people from all those other four-year campuses anyway. And when they have student veterans that want to transfer down here, they call me. And let me talk to them. I think a couple up at UW Eau Claire that I've talked to who plan to be down here next fall as transfer students. So there is that human connection there. But do we do a blanket of let's go over here and grab their veterans or talk to them about transferring? You gotta be a little bit careful. MATC I know would not have a problem with it because we have a lot of our agreements already in place. If I were to go to UW La Crosse, which many see as kind of the next in the tier, they may have some problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how else to put that without getting in trouble.
We've talked about communication with other schools and kind of like a sharing, or for some schools, not sharing of ideas. There's currently not a consistent set of policies and procedures in place for working with student veterans. Do you believe a government or state program is feasible or even at all smart, or does it vary from school to school, campus to campus?
Yeah. Well, I mean, every campus is a little bit different and the needs are a little bit different. I would say when you talk about you kind of make my skin crawl when you say a federal program. I don't think we need another federal program. I don't think we need another state program. I think what I would like to see, let's just limit it to Wisconsin, is someone to be responsible for student veterans on every campus. I don't think it should necessarily be the certifying official, okay? Again, the VA certifying official is a person that works with student database and the VA database and simply says the student is eligible for this benefit. They check to make sure they're registered for X number of hours, and then they certify them in the VA database. It's a very tedious job. I'm glad that there are people that excel. We have a great certifying official here on UW-Madison. Bless her heart. I throw myself out her window. She works on the 10th floor if I had to do what she does. But she's always so jovial. It's crazy because she has an awful job. But I don't think that necessarily should be the person. Yet a lot of campuses will point to the VA certified official. Yeah, we have a veterans person. It's you know, Miss Jones here that works in this cubicle and she's doesn't know anything about the military, but she knows how to certify in the VA database. But that's our veteran specialist. That's who's going to work for the veterans. That may not even be her full-time job either. I like Illinois passed the governor signed a law down there saying that every campus had to, with more than 1,000 students, had to have someone responsible for working with student veterans. Had to. And being responsible, often in a place like UW-Madison, when you say, I am responsible for this. If it doesn't go right, it's my fault. That isn't real popular here. People aren't always willing to do that. But I think if every campus had someone that was responsible, you know, for me, student veteran doesn't have, has issues here on campus, working on campus, getting stuff done, that's my fault, okay? Yeah, I'm not gonna cry about it, but I wanna find out what the problem is and help fix it. So most of the time we can fix it, sometimes we can't. Sometimes they want something that just is not gonna happen, and I'm gonna be honest with them. But every campus needs someone that's willing to do that. And once, we establish a network of folks, easing transitions from one campus to another, it's a great way to facilitate it. You know, I mentioned Eau Claire. They have a woman up there who works with non-traditional students, Bonnie Isaacson, okay? She's the one that connected me with these students. I know Bonnie occasionally at these twice-a-year meetings. She has no problem calling me up. Now, she's not a veteran. But she cares about the students, and she takes it personally, takes personal responsibility to look out for them, particularly veterans. And, she'll call me up and say, I got these students that are going to transfer. So I think that's a way to kind of solve that problem. I don't think we necessarily need a whole other layer of bureaucracy there.
Okay, with my last question, what do you think should be improved on this campus? What are you going to, in the near future, look to improve? Obviously, we've talked about the Yellow Ribbon program. That seems to be what you really want to see done. Is there anything besides that that you can see is something that we need to provide for veterans?
Yellow Ribbon program. I'll say it again, just because I want to reiterate that. Someday I'd like to see, if possible, a Veterans Center. Again, there's a benefit to me being in the Dean of Students office and our certifying official to be in the Registrar's office because we both have access and abilities to do things that the other doesn't. So really, when it comes time, I have no problem calling up our certifying official. She has no problem calling me when we know that the other can better serve the student. There's no egos involved, nothing else. She is here to help students just like I am, and so we work well together. Us being co-located would, I think, just make it that much better. Can we still function not being that way? Yeah, but it makes it a little harder on the student. I mentioned the Veterans Transition course. We're gonna be offering two sections of that next fall. Also, starting next fall, we have a Veterans Crisis Loan. That's going to be available through the UW Foundation. That loan is started by a donation from a local Veterans of Foreign Wars post. and we're looking to build that amount up. And that really the reason for that fund is, again, it's a loan. Veterans who arrive, maybe they had not applied for their benefits yet, and now there's going to be the delay. They won't get their first check until the end of October or end of November. So what are they living on in the meantime? We can give them a small low interest loan to help carry them through. And again, that's specifically geared toward veterans. And that is something brand new that we're just starting next fall. So other than that, you know, I think there's a the population of graduate students. Again, I mentioned the bureaucracy here on UW-Madison. I now have the ability to identify new graduate students coming in. And in fact, just today I got an email from the graduate school saying we're going to have this welcome seminar. We'd like you to be there. We know you're now in contact with graduate students before they arrive on campus. We also want you here at this fair to make sure that all the graduate students that are student veterans are aware of your presence, aware of Vets for Vets, and can take all the advantage of all that, same as undergrads. So that's something that's going to be new this fall too. You know, trying to balance out with my other duties up here can be a little bit challenging, but this is definitely more. Veteran stuff is a lot more fun because it's a great population to work with. We have not done anything with the population of dependents, military dependents on campus. On the application now, if you have a spouse or a parent that has served in the military, you can check a box. We can identify that population. Originally, we put that in there to reach out to those individuals who may have parents or spouses deployed or serving on active duty, or it may even be eligible for benefits they don't know about. But it's just shared the time. Making the time to do that and doing all the follow-up just hasn't happened yet. So hopefully we'll accomplish those additional things.
All right, with that, thanks again, John, for agreeing to speak with me.
All right, well, thanks for the interview.